A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Here's something that doesn't get said enough. Your CIE-CD pipeline is probably too fast. Not in the congratulations, you're elite way. In the you've optimized for velocity so hard that you've forgotten the point of a gate is to actually stop things way. And Daniel sent us a prompt that gets right at this.
Oh, this is a good one. He's asking about deliberately slow deployment pipelines, the kind where stability and quality control are the whole point, not afterthoughts you squeeze in before the deploy button lights up. He mentions the tension between continuous deployment and the long-term release model you see in Linux distributions, and he's got a practical angle too. He wants to set up a staging environment for testing podcast episodes before they go public, and he's asking what tooling and workflows exist for teams that need slower, more deliberate release cycles.
Before we dive in, quick note, DeepSeek V4 Pro is writing our script today, so if anything sounds unusually coherent, that's why.
Alright, so let's frame this. For years, the industry narrative has been, deploy faster, deploy more often, if it breaks, just roll forward. And that works for a lot of teams. But there's a whole class of work where the cost of a bad deployment isn't, we'll fix it in the next push. It's we just shipped a broken kernel to millions of users, or we expose patient data, or, in Daniel's case, we publish an episode with hallucinations that our entire audience heard.
There's another layer here that makes this timely. We're entering a world where AI-generated code and automated pull requests are flooding repositories. The bottleneck used to be, can we write the code fast enough? Now the bottleneck is, can we validate what just showed up before it hits production? The whole equation has flipped. Writing is cheap. Verification is expensive.
When GitHub Copilot or Claude or whatever agent can spit out a dozen pull requests in an afternoon, your pipeline suddenly has a lot more stuff trying to get through. And if your pipeline is optimized for speed, congratulations. You've built a fire hose pointed directly at your users.
The question Daniel's asking is essentially, how do you build a pipeline that's designed to be a filter, not a fire hose? What tools exist? What workflows make sense? And how do you do this without making your developers want to quit? Which is a real risk, by the way. Slow pipelines can be miserable if you design them wrong.
Yeah, and I think that's the tension we should unpack. They're slow because we're careful, and they're slow because we're broken. And the line between them is thinner than most people admit. But the fact that Daniel's asking about this from the perspective of an AI agent workflow makes it especially interesting, because he's not trying to slow down human developers. He's trying to build guardrails around automated content generation.
Where do we even start with this? The tooling landscape has actually changed a fair bit in the last couple of years, and a lot of the slow pipeline patterns that used to require custom scripting are now native features in the major platforms.
Right, and to be clear, slow pipeline means very different things depending on where you sit. On one end, you've got continuous deployment. Code goes from commit to production in hours, maybe minutes. The Dora metrics call this elite performance, multiple deploys per day. On the other end, you've got long-term support releases. Ubuntu LTS with a 2-year support cycle, Debian stable with its multi-year cadence. Those are the extremes.
Daniel's asking about the neglected middle. Not deploy every 10 minutes. Not ship once every 2 years. Something like code gets written, goes through automated checks, lands in a staging environment, sits there for review, and only then gets promoted to production.
And the key word there is intentional. This isn't a slow pipeline because your tests take forever or your build process is broken. It's slow by design because you've inserted validation stages that require human judgment or time-based cooldown periods. The Debian LTS team runs a 5-stage pipeline: unstable to testing, to stable to proposed, updates to security updates, and every transition has both automated checks and manual sign-offs.
The practical definition: a slow-moving deployment pipeline is one where the path from commit to production includes deliberate, non-automatable gates. Required human reviews, staging environment soak periods, Security scans that block the pipeline if they find anything above a threshold. The deployment velocity is capped not by how fast you can push code, but by how fast you can responsibly validate it.
The why would you choose this question is actually the most important part. Daniel's case is a perfect example. He's generating podcast content with AI agents, and a hallucination or a garbled segment that hits the public feed is a real problem. It's not like a SaaS app where you can roll back silently. The artifact is public, persistent, and consumed immediately by an audience, so the cost of a bad deployment justifies the friction.
That pattern generalizes. Medical device software, financial settlement systems, anything where a bug means regulatory fines or physical harm, those teams have been doing slow pipelines forever. But what's changing is that more and more teams are realizing they need this, even if they're not in a regulated industry. AI-generated content is accelerating that shift because the volume of stuff trying to reach production is exploding, while the tolerance for errors hasn't changed.
That's exactly where the tooling comes in. If you're building a deliberately gated pipeline right now, the landscape is actually better than it was even 18 months ago. GitLab shipped compliance pipelines and security approval rules in Q4 of 2025. And these are genuinely useful. You can define a pipeline configuration that's enforced at the group level, meaning individual projects can't bypass the gates even if they modify their own CI config.
Which is the kind of thing that sounds like enterprise bureaucracy, until you realize that without it, the slow part of your slow pipeline is entirely optional, and the first time someone's in a hurry, they'll comment out the approval step and push straight to production.
That's exactly the problem. GitLab's compliance pipelines solve it by making the pipeline definition itself immutable from the project level. You define your stages: build, test, security scan, staging deploy, manual approval, production deploy, in a separate repository that's managed by whoever owns the release process. Individual teams can add their own jobs, but they can't remove or reorder the required gates.
On the GitHub side?
GitHub added deployment protection rules back in October 2023. And by mid-2024, they'd made required reviewers a native feature in GitHub Enterprise. The way it works is you define an environment, say staging or production, and then attach protection rules to it. Required reviewers means GitHub literally blocks the deployment until someone from a specified list approves it. You can also set a wait timer, so even after approval, the deployment sits for a configurable cooldown period. I've seen teams use a 48-hour window between staging approval and production deployment.
48 hours seems like a lot. What's the actual value of the cooldown beyond just having an approval?
The cooldown catches a different category of problem. A human reviewer looks at the code and the test results and says, "This looks correct." But a cooldown catches the "we didn't think to check that" category. Maybe a dependent service has a scheduled change during that window. Maybe someone on the team remembers an edge case in the shower the next morning. It's cheap insurance, and it forces a rhythm where deployments are deliberate events rather than impulses.
Daniel's specific use case is interesting here because he's not deploying code in the traditional sense. He's deploying generated content, a podcast episode. And he mentioned wanting a staging environment that's not publicly indexed, where he can review the output before it goes live. That's a slightly different flavor of the same problem.
There's a clean solution for that now. Cloudflare launched staging mode for pages in March of this year. It gives you a password-protected preview deployment that search engines can't index. You get a URL that mirrors your production configuration, same build process, same asset handling, but it's behind a login and excluded from crawling. For Daniel's workflow, that means he could have his AI agent generate an episode, push it to a staging branch, and get a fully rendered preview that he can listen to before merging to main.
Fuzzle's preview deployments have had this for a while too, with the password protection option. The pattern is the same. Every pull request or branch push generates a unique deployment URL that's functionally identical to production but isolated. The key for a slow pipeline is making that staging deployment a required gate, not an optional nice to have.
And both platforms let you integrate that gate into your CI pipeline. So the flow would be, AI agent generates content and opens a pull request. The pipeline builds and deploys to the staging URL. The pipeline pauses and sends a notification. Slack, Teams, email, saying staging deployment ready for review at this URL. And the pipeline doesn't proceed until a human clicks approve.
This is where Jenkins still has a surprisingly relevant feature, Jenkins has had the input step forever. It literally pauses a pipeline and waits for a human to click a button, optionally with a timeout. It's clunky compared to the modern platforms, but it's battle-tested, and for teams that are already on Jenkins, it's the simplest way to insert a manual gate without adding new tooling.
The Jenkins input step is one of those things that people in the everything must be automated. Camp love to hate, but it exists for a reason. You can configure it to send an email or a Slack message with a link, and the pipeline just sits there in a pause state until someone responds. The downside is that a paused Jenkins job ties up an executor, which can become a resource problem at scale. GitLab's manual job type and GitHub's environment approval handle this more cleanly by making the gate a state transition rather than a held resource.
The tooling is there, and it's actually converging across platforms. The harder question is how you implement these gates without making the whole thing feel like bureaucratic theater. Because I've seen pipelines where the approval step becomes a rubber stamp. Someone gets a Slack notification, glances at it for half a second, clicks approve, and moves on. That's not quality control. That's security theater.
That's the central tension. And I think the way you prevent that is by coupling the manual gate to specific concrete artifacts that the reviewer is expected to examine. Not approve this deployment in the abstract, but review the staging URL, verify the SonarQube quality gate passed, confirm the OWASP ZAP CAN shows zero high severity findings, then approve. The approval button should be the last step in a checklist, not the only step.
Let's talk about those quality gates specifically, because they're what makes the manual approval meaningful. SonarQube's quality gate feature lets you set thresholds, block the pipeline if the new code introduces more than a 5% increase in technical debt ratio, for example. That's a quantitative bar, not a vibe check.
OWASP ZAP for security scanning. You can run it as a headless scan in your pipeline, configure it to fail on any high severity alert, and suddenly your manual approval isn't, does this look okay? It's, we've already verified that static analysis and security scanning passed. Now a human needs to confirm the functional behavior. Each gate does a specific job, and the human is there for what automation can't catch.
Which brings us to how you structure the workflow end to end. The release train model is the classic pattern here. Ubuntu runs a 6-month release cadence. They don't ship whenever a feature is ready. They ship on a schedule. Features either make the train or they wait for the next one. Kubernetes does something similar with 3 releases per year.
For a small team, the release train doesn't need to be a whole bureaucratic apparatus. It can be as simple as, we have a release branch. We merge to it on a schedule, say every Thursday at 2 p.m., and that merge triggers the full gated pipeline. Development happens continuously on feature branches, but production deployments happen on the cadence. You've decoupled development velocity from deployment velocity.
That decoupling is the insight that makes slow pipelines tolerable. Developers aren't sitting around waiting for their code to ship. They're working on the next thing while the current release batch goes through the gates. The pipeline is slow, but the development loop stays fast.
The Debian LTS team is the extreme version of this. 2-year release cycle, 5 stages, unstable, testing, stable, proposed, updates, security updates, and each stage transition has both automated tests and manual sign-offs from the release team. A package might sit in testing for months before it's deemed ready for stable, but the maintainers aren't idle during that time. They're working on the next version, fixing bugs that the testing phase surfaces.
For a 5-person SaaS team, you don't need 5 stages and a 2-year cycle. You might need 2 environments, staging and production, with a required reviewer and a cooldown period. The principles scale down. GitHub environments with required reviewers, a staging deployment triggered by pull requests, and a 48-hour window before production promotion. That's maybe an afternoon of configuration. And it gives you a genuine quality gate, without paralyzing the team.
The key design principle is that the gate should be proportional to the risk. For Daniel's podcast pipeline, the risk is a garbled episode hitting the public feed. The appropriate gate is a staging deployment that a human listens to before approving. For a financial settlement system, you'd want multiple reviewers, a longer cooldown, and probably a compliance officer sign-off. The tooling supports the full spectrum. You just need to be honest about what you're actually protecting against. Once you've established that the tooling exists and the design principles are sound, there's a second question. What actually happens to a team psychologically when you slow down the pipeline? There's a knock-on effect that nobody in the ship fast, camp likes to acknowledge. Slower deployment cadences actually force better testing discipline.
How does that follow? I'd think the opposite. If you're shipping less often, the pressure to get each release right goes up, and that can lead to analysis paralysis, not better testing.
That's the negative side, and we'll get to it. But the positive mechanism is straightforward. When you deploy multiple times a day, the cost of a bad deployment is low. You just roll back or hotfix, and the pain is contained. So teams get sloppy with their test suites. They skip integration tests because we'll catch it in production. But when you deploy once a week or once a month, a bad deployment is painful enough that you actually invest in the test pyramid you've been pretending to follow all along. Unit tests, integration tests, end-to-end tests. Each layer does real work because skipping them has real consequences.
The slow pipeline acts as a forcing function for the discipline that fast pipelines claim to enable, but often erode. I've seen teams with continuous deployment who haven't run their full test suite in months because it takes 20 minutes and we need to ship.
The test pyramid is one of those concepts that everyone nods along with in architecture meetings and then ignores in practice. Slow pipelines make it hard to ignore. But you mentioned the dark side, release anxiety, and that's real. When you deploy infrequently, each deployment becomes a high-stakes event. The changes accumulate, the diff gets enormous, and the blast radius of a failure expands. That's how you get teams that are terrified of deployment days.
This is where the release train model does double duty. By shipping on a fixed cadence, you prevent the accumulation problem. Weekly releases mean the diff is never more than a week's worth of changes. That's manageable. Monthly releases start to get uncomfortable. Quarterly releases are where the anxiety really sets in.
NPM is a fascinating case study here because they run both models simultaneously. They have canary releases that ship as soon as a PR merges, fast, continuous, bleeding edge. But they also maintain an LTS release line on a 6-month cycle, with a 30-day release candidate phase where the community pounds on it before its blessed is stable. The canary channel absorbs the risk, and the LTS channel inherits the confidence.
The canary releases are essentially the testing phase for the LTS. That's clever. The fast pipeline feeds the slow pipeline.
And for a small team, you can approximate this with feature flags. Ship the code to production behind a flag, let it bake with a subset of users or internal testers, and then flip the flag when you're confident. The deployment is fast, but the release is slow. It's a way to get the psychological benefits of a slow pipeline without actually slowing down your infrastructure.
Let me push on the organizational side, because tooling only gets you so far. In Linux distributions, there's a formal release manager role, someone whose entire job is to track what's going into the release, coordinate the testing phases, and make the final call on whether to ship. That role almost doesn't exist in the SaaS world, and I think that's a mistake for teams that are deliberately slowing down.
The release manager role is one of those things that sounds like process overhead until you've been through a bad release without one. The problem is that it's a burnout-prone role if one person owns it permanently. The SRE world has a better pattern, the release captain rotation. One person is on point for the current release cycle, then they hand off to the next person. The rotation distributes the cognitive load and also cross-trains the team. Everyone learns what it takes to ship responsibly.
The release captain isn't a bottleneck if you've designed the gates properly. Their job isn't to personally review every line of code. It's to verify that the automated gates passed, confirm that the required human reviews happened, and make the go or no-go call based on evidence, not gut feeling.
The WordPress core release process is a good model for this. They run a 4-month major release cycle with distinct phases: beta, release candidate 1, release candidate 2, release candidate 3, and then release day. Each phase has specific entry criteria. Beta means all features are frozen and it's ready for broad testing. Release candidate means no known regressions. The release lead, that's their term for the release captain, is responsible for enforcing those criteria, not for doing all the testing themselves.
4 months with four phases. That's substantial, but WordPress powers something like 40% of the web. The stakes justify the process. For Daniel's podcast pipeline, the stakes are lower, but the pattern scales. A staging branch, a preview deployment, a listen-through by a second person, then merge to main. That's maybe an hour of wall clock time, but the structure is the same. Defined phases with defined gates.
This connects to Daniel's AI agent context in a way that I think is going to become increasingly common. When your content is generated by an AI, the failure modes are different from human-authored content. You're not looking for syntax errors or broken builds. You're looking for semantic regressions. Did the AI change the meaning of something without changing the surface structure? Did it hallucinate a fact that wasn't in the source material?
That's a hard testing problem. With code, you can run unit tests and integration tests and get deterministic pass or fail results. With generated text or audio, what does a test even look like?
There are actually emerging approaches for this. One is diff-based regression testing. You only revalidate the sections that change between the previous version and the new version. If the AI rewrote paragraph 3, you test paragraph 3, not the entire episode transcript. This keeps the review scope manageable and prevents the human reviewer from getting numb after listening to 45 minutes of mostly unchanged content.
You're isolating the delta. That makes the manual review actually feasible rather than a rubber stamp.
And there's a more sophisticated layer you can add. Semantic similarity checks using models like BERT score. BERT score computes a similarity score between two pieces of text based on their semantic meaning, not just word overlap. So if the AI changed, the ceasefire proposal was rejected, to the ceasefire proposal was accepted, BERT score would flag a low similarity score even though the surface edit was tiny. You can set a threshold. If the similarity drops below, say, 0.95, the pipeline flags it for human review.
That's clever. So the automated system isn't making a pass or fail judgment on the content. It's surfacing this change might be semantically significant. A human should look at it. It's triage, not adjudication.
And that's the right role for automation in a slow pipeline. Automation does the filtering and the flagging. Humans do the judgment. For Daniel's specific workflow, I'd set it up like this. A staging branch in his repository. A GitHub action that triggers on pull request to that branch, deploys to a password protected versal preview, runs a Playwright test suite to verify the podcast feed renders correctly and the audio files are accessible, runs a BERT score comparison against the previous episode's transcript to flag any semantically surprising changes, and then pauses for manual approval. The approval step sends a notification with the staging URL and a summary of what the automated checks found.
The manual approval is a second team member, not the person who generated the episode, listening to the staging URL and clicking approve. That separation of duties is small but critical. The person who wrote the thing shouldn't be the person who signs off on it.
It's the same principle as code review applied to generated content, and I think we're going to see a lot more of this pattern as AI-generated content becomes the default rather than the exception. The bottleneck isn't going to be, can we produce content fast enough? It's going to be, can we verify what we produce before it reaches an audience?
For someone listening who wants to start slowing down their pipeline tomorrow, not in 6 months after a big re-architecture, where do they actually start?
Add a staging environment with a manual approval gate before production. That's it. You don't need compliance pipelines or release trains or semantic similarity checks on day one. Just make it so that nothing reaches users until a second human has seen it running in a production-like environment and clicked approve.
That single gate gives you a disproportionate amount of the quality benefit. I'd argue 80% of the value for maybe 20% of the overhead. The key is that the approval has to be meaningful. The approver needs a concrete artifact to review, not just a notification that says, deployment ready, click to proceed.
The approval is coupled to a staging URL, a test report, a diff summary. The approver's job is to look at those things and make a judgment. If they're just clicking approve on every notification, you've built a rubber stamp, not a gate.
The second thing I'd recommend is release branches with a scheduled merge window. Pick a time, say Thursday at 2 p.m., and that's when staging gets promoted to production. Development keeps happening on feature branches all week. Nothing slows down, but deployments are batched and predictable.
Predictable deployments are easier to monitor, easier to roll back, and easier to staff around. If everyone knows Thursday afternoon is deployment time, the team is mentally prepared. nobody's getting paged at 11 p.m. on a Saturday because someone decided to ship on a whim.
Here's the concrete thing a listener can do this week. Audit your current pipeline and find the fastest path from a code change to production. There's always one. The path with the fewest checks, the fewest reviewers, the fewest gates. Add exactly one deliberate obstacle to that path. A required code review from someone outside your team. An OWS zap scan that blocks on high severity findings. A staging deployment that requires a second person sign-off. Then measure your incident rate for a month and see what happens.
Most teams will find that the one gate catches things that were slipping through before. And once you see that, you start asking what else you're missing. That's how the slow pipeline mentality takes root. Not through a mandate from above, but through the evidence that a little friction actually prevents fires.
The beautiful thing about starting with one gate is that it's reversible. If it doesn't reduce incidents, or if it creates an unbearable bottleneck, you remove it. You haven't bet the farm on a new process. You ran an experiment.
Which is, ironically, the same argument that continuous deployment people make. Ship small changes, measure, iterate. The difference is that we're applying it to the pipeline itself, not just the product.
Slow and deliberate doesn't mean rigid and permanent. It means intentional. You choose your gates because you've measured what they catch, and you adjust them when the evidence changes.
That's the whole thing in a nutshell, really.
Here's the open question I keep circling back to. Right now, slow pipelines are a deliberate choice. You opt into them because your domain demands it, or you've been burned by fast deployments. But as AI-generated code becomes the majority of commits, I wonder if slow pipelines stop being a choice and start being the default out of sheer necessity.
I think that's exactly where we're heading. When a human writes a pull request, you have some intuitive sense of the risk. You know the developer, you know the area of the code base, you can calibrate your review accordingly. When an AI agent opens 20 pull requests overnight, you have none of that intuition. The only rational response is to route everything through the same rigorous gates every time.
The verification bottleneck forces universality. You can't afford to fast-track anything because you can't afford to trust the provenance.
There's a parallel trend that's going to accelerate this. The compliance world is building what people are calling continuous compliance pipelines, automated enforcement of regulatory requirements as gates in the deployment process. We're talking SOC2, HIPAA, FedRAMP. Instead of an annual audit where someone checks boxes, the pipeline continuously verifies that every deployment meets the regulatory standard and blocks anything that doesn't.
Which means the slow pipeline isn't just a quality choice. It becomes a legal requirement embedded in the tooling. I'd expect that to be a major trend heading into 2027, especially as more companies handle sensitive data in AI workflows, where the compliance surface area is enormous.
We spent a decade optimizing for velocity, and now we're building infrastructure to deliberately add friction back in. But it's smart friction, evidence-based friction. The kind that prevents disasters rather than just slowing things down for the sake of ceremony.
The teams that figure out how to make that friction feel like value rather than bureaucracy are the ones that are going to thrive. The pipeline becomes a trusted advisor, not a toll booth.
This has been my Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop for keeping the show running, and thanks to everyone who leaves reviews. It helps people find the show. If you want more episodes or you've got a prompt you'd like us to wrestle with, head over to myweirdprompts.com.
Remember, speed is a feature. Deliberation is a feature. The trick is knowing which one your deployment actually needs.
See you next time.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. and stay curious, keep weird in mind.